It's Monday, September 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Coming up this half hour, German Chancellor Angela Merkel is returned to office, but now may be facing a shaky coalition. The clock is ticking for the U.S. Senate to repeal and replace Obamacare. Will the third time be the charm? And President Donald Trump goes off script talking about sports.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a off the field right now, out, he's fired.
It's all coming up this half hour on International Edition. Angela Merkel has won a fourth term as Germany's chancellor in a federal election, where the outcome seemed inevitable since the start of campaigning. But her ruling Christian Democrats got a lower share of the vote than predicted, and Germany's far right surged, securing a bigger vote than most pollsters forecast. Still, RMIT University Europe scholar Bruce Wilson told VOA's Victor Beatty that he thinks Merkel's win was quite an accomplishment.
When you look at the turmoil and the uncertainty in other parts of Europe, to have such a consistent and stable leadership of the nation through four separate electoral periods is a remarkable thing. But yes, there's certainly widespread concern about the rise of the far right and just how her new coalition will look.
The Alternative for Germany, AfD as it's called, won 13% of the vote, including nearly 23% in eastern Germany, which is Angela Merkel's home base. A significant increase of some 87 seats.
Yes, and perhaps even more than that, I think. It's not a surprise that the base is in East Germany, because in the 20-odd years since reunification, East Germany has clearly struggled still in the transition, much as other Central and East European nations have.
The publisher-editor of the German weekly Die Zeit said the vote marked a tectonic shift in German politics. The three-way coalition Ms. Merkel looks likely to try to forge will be, quote, highly unstable. What do you think?
The claim that it will be unstable rests on the divergent views of the Greens on the one hand and the FDP on the other. The question for Angela Merkel will be how to harness those two parties that will potentially go in divergent directions. And I think the thing that works in favour of stable government is precisely the apparent success of the AfD.
Bruce, was the AfD's success tied to the immigration policies of the Merkel government?
Well, that's certainly the reading of commentators who know more about these things than I do. But this is not a particularly surprising result, nor do I think that it is a hugely worrying result. If we look at the last 5 years or so, there has clearly been a rise of the far-right parties across Europe, and that's to some degree been a response to the crisis in its neighbourhood in Syria, the burden of refugees in Turkey, and the implications that has for Europe. Now, these are not developments of Europe's making. It's had an impact on Europe, clearly, but these are not crises of Europe's making, and Europe has had to manage this. And yet, even with this turmoil, the most that the far-right parties have got to in any country is around about 15%.
RMIT University Europe scholar Bruce Wilson speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. After the political disorder in London followed by Britain's vote to leave the European Union and turmoil in the United States following President Trump's first months in office, many Germans told reporters they were in no mood to gamble, so they favored Merkel. Well, joining us now here in studio, as he does every day, is Andrew Palczewski, VOA social media editor. I don't know if Germany is trending right now out there, but there seem to be a number of big topics floating around. What are you seeing?
Well, the big story here in the U.S. is focused on sports, and usually that's only the case when it's something like the Super Bowl or the World Series, but this is the issue of players taking a knee during the national anthem, something that they've been doing for a number of years since Colin Kaepernick, the former NFL quarterback, started doing it to protest the treatment of African Americans by police. Well, a number of players have done this, and it's gotten a lot of attention, particularly from President Trump this weekend, saying that those players should be fined or fired. So you're seeing a lot of players galvanizing and supporting those that are taking a knee, you're seeing a lot of players that are doing so themselves, and you're seeing a lot of reaction on social media from both sides. So you have people supporting these protests using hashtags like hashtag take a knee. And there was one case in particular, a man named John Middlemas. He's a 97-year-old World War II veteran from the U.S. state of Missouri. And his grandson posted a picture of him kneeling, and he said, "My grandpa's a 97-year-old World War II veteran and a farmer who wanted to join those who take a knee." And he quotes his grandfather as saying, "Those kids have every right to protest."
Yeah.
So he's become kind of an internet hero, people saying, who would know better about respecting America and preserving our rights than a man who's A, lived for nearly 100 years, and B, risked his life to protect our freedoms in World War II. So he's getting a lot of attention with that hashtag take a knee hashtag. We're also seeing people use hashtag stand for our anthem or hashtag take a stand, not a knee.
Right.
President Trump among them using that first hashtag to trying to rally his allies and supporters, saying that this is not the way that people should be protesting, that he considers it unpatriotic. And a lot of people posting a picture of a man named Pat Tillman. He was a former NFL player who joined the Army during the Iraq War, and he died while serving. They said that he is an example of why we need to stand for those soldiers who gave their lives and fought for those freedoms. We should honor them. So really no right or wrong answer here. There's a back and forth, whether you consider it unpatriotic or patriotic, disrespectful, or a way to show our First Amendment rights. It's the back and forth that's going on unabated on social media.
Fascinating. This is not a sports story. This is very much a story about, I think, the fabric of the United States and what people think it means to be a citizen of the country. Interestingly, in about 10 minutes, we're going to be looking more deeply into this this issue. But I know you've got a bit of a sore throat in maybe 30 seconds or so. Can you tell us anything else going on out there?
Well, the other big story is North Korea. Of course, this has been a back and forth between President Trump and Kim Jong-un and the American government and the North Korean government over the past few weeks. And President Trump tweeting out over the weekend that the foreign minister at the UN is echoing the thoughts of Little Rocket Man. Of course, he referred to Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. Now he's calling him Little Rocket Man. Mm-hmm. And as you might remember from the presidential campaign, he called Senator Marco Rubio of Florida Little Marco. So that's one of his kind of
go-to
phrases that he assigns to people that he doesn't care for. Well, now North Korea has responded saying that they are at war with the U.S. This has caused a lot of consternation on social media, people saying, as if this could not have gotten any worse, now they're saying we're at war. So a lot of people very concerned, checking social media feverishly to see what the latest updates are.
It is very serious. There's no question about it. Andrew Palcheski, thank you so much, and we're going to let you go.
Thank you.
And heal up. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media editor. Here are some of the top stories trending at this hour. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's center-right party loses seats in Sunday's election. Emergency work continues in Mexico City following last week's earthquake. President Donald Trump embroiled in another controversy involving race, and the White House expands a travel ban, including for the nations of Chad and Venezuela. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com. That's our website, and also on our mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency is getting ready for their next bed rest study, which involves subjects staying in bed for 60 days. ESA scientists want to find out if a mix of antioxidants and vitamins might help astronauts fight the side effects of living in space. The study is meant to mimic changes astronauts must endure in space. While going to bed might seem like a nice, restful experiment to sign up for, keep in mind that test subjects must keep at least one shoulder on their bed at all times for 60 days. And the bed they'll lie in will have the head end tilted down 6 degrees for the entire time, something that can make blood and fluids move to the head. So, would you sign up for this test? I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard. Coming up, Kenya takes a major step toward cleaning up the environment. First, Republicans in the U.S. Senate are trying once more to repeal the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. But they're facing a strict deadline. If they can't get it done by this Saturday, they face a significantly more difficult task in the coming new fiscal year. Now, it's all very complicated, arcane, much like the Senate, so we asked VOA's congressional correspondent Michael Bowman to help us understand just what's at stake.
Doug, what we have before the Senate is the latest in a series of Republican attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare. There was an attempt in July that famously failed when Senator John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, at the very last minute voted against it and torpedoed his own party's bill. Now we have another attempt to do something similar, but by slightly different means. What is on the table right now is an attempt to dismantle Obamacare by taking the funds that have been used to subsidize people of limited means in their health care purchases, in their purchases of private insurance, to take that money and to distribute it to the states and to basically get the federal government out of the health care business to a significant degree and use the concept of federalism and tell each state you get a pool of money and you can do with it as you choose, as you please, to craft your own health care programs for your populace, for those people living in your state.
We know that the Democrats have been unified in their opposition to the various efforts. Is this new approach proving any more popular among Senate Republicans than the previous attempts?
That is difficult to gauge, and at this point, we don't even know whether there's going to be a vote held. Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority leader, has said he will only hold a vote on this bill if he is assured that he has the votes to get it through. In other words, they don't want to have another disaster of a vote going south, of a vote going bad, as happened in July. Right now, Senator John McCain is objecting yet again. He says that this is not the way to do legislation. The healthcare industry in America accounts for 1/6 of the U.S. economy. This is a bill that is just getting one Senate hearing in just a few hours from now, where there has been no process in the various committees. There has been no opportunity for both parties to be involved, that this is a rush job against the clock, and he doesn't think that this is how business should be done in America. There's also a sort of uber fiscal hawk of the Senate by the name of Rand Paul, and he's objecting to it simply saying that it doesn't go far enough, that it essentially forces the states to craft their own mini Obamacares state by state. And what he really wants to see is a real ratcheting down of the funds that are spent. And so he's not satisfied. Senate Republicans have 52 seats out of 100. They can lose two votes, Doug, and then Vice President Mike Pence would cast the tie-breaking vote. But if they lose more than two, then this effort fails, assuming that all Democrats remain united. And so if you have John McCain in opposition, if you have Rand Paul in opposition, then the question becomes, do moderate Republican senators somehow find a way to support the bill? And so all focus is on Susan Collins of Maine, who also voted against the previous Republican plans, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who joined Senator Collins in voting no. They are officially undecided, but Senator Collins right now is leaning towards a no vote, and Lisa Murkowski is believed to be as well. Interestingly enough, Graham Cassidy, Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, the Republican senators who are putting forward this bill, are attempting to tweak it to give a little bit of extra money to the states of Maine and Alaska and right. certain other states in hopes of securing those moderate votes, and it remains to be seen whether that will be successful.
Well, very quickly, in just about 30 seconds, doesn't that effort to swing a little bit more money to Maine and to Alaska, isn't there a danger that the public will look cynically at that as just an effort to buy votes?
Yes, there is certainly that danger, and it could be pointed out that certain sweetheart deals were also doled out when Obamacare was passed back in 2010. However, I think the real risk here is essentially the more a Republican bill is moved to the political center, the more it will alienate conservatives. The more it moves to the hard right, the more it alienates moderates. So Republicans really don't have a lot of leeway here. If they sweeten the bill in a way that might appeal to Senators Collin and Murkowski, they might face a revolt from a whole host of very conservative Republicans and vice versa.
Michael Bowman, thank you so much for the time.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure, Doug.
VOA congressional correspondent Michael Bowman. Well, sticking with politics for just a moment, National Football League players, coaches, and team owners have demonstrated solidarity and expressed criticism against President Donald Trump's remarks recently about players who kneel during the performance of the national anthem as a sign of protest. Many of the players knelt when the anthem was played before various Sunday games. Some owners and coaches locked hands with their players, in fact, in a show of unity. But as VOA's Zlatica Hoke reports, Americans are still divided on whether kneeling or other defiant postures during the playing of the national anthem are appropriate.
The day of demonstrations began Sunday in London during a game between the Baltimore Ravens and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Some players knelt and others stood locked arm in arm with them when the U.S. anthem was played at Wembley Stadium. Similar scenes took place at football games across the United States as players, their coaches, and even some team owners showed solidarity in the face of President Donald Trump's criticism. The president offended players with his remarks during a speech in Alabama Friday.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
Trump was reacting to what he called a show of disrespect for the American flag by players who refused to stand for the national anthem. On Saturday, he rescinded an invitation to the White House for NBA championship basketball team, the Golden State Warriors, citing player Stephen Curry's hesitation to accept. The star player has been critical of the president.
My stance is the same as it was yesterday, and even kind of cemented even further about how things have, in our country have gone, especially with him, you know, representing us, and for me, not in a very damaging way, but.
The team's coach, Steve Kerr, said something like this has never happened before when there were political differences between players and elected officials.
I thought yesterday his comments about the NFL players was as bad as anything he has said to this point. It's awful. You're talking about young men who are peacefully protesting police brutality and racism, racial inequality.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser stepped in to invite the Warriors to visit the nation's capital anyway to celebrate equality, diversity, and inclusion. But Americans are divided in their reaction.
I agree with the president. Maybe not the way he said it, but we should be more respectful of the flag.
We have a First Amendment in this country, and I think that allows people to express how they feel in the way that they feel they need to express it.
Football player Colin Kaepernick started the trend of kneeling during the performance of the Star Spangled Banner last season. The star quarterback has not been signed by any team since becoming a free agent in the spring. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition, coming to you from Washington, D.C. Last month, Kenya joined 10 other African countries that are trying to control an avalanche of plastic waste. It's part of a growing international trend to tax or even ban the plastic bags that are a big part of worldwide explosion of trash. It's a good environmental move, some say, though many argue it will cost money and jobs. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
Based on data compiled by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the world uses between 50 billion and 1 trillion plastic bags every year. And each one can live in a landfill for thousands of years. That's why Kenya banned them in August.
It's the constitutional right of every Kenyan to live within a clean and secure environment.
But Kenyan officials say the decision is about more than the environment.
We have also considered our responsibility to global sustainable goals as part of achieving sustainability in our development by balancing between development and environmental consideration.
Imagine the income level. Kenyan and UN officials say the loss of the plastic bag can be a gain for small businesses that are creating plastic bag alternatives.
Even if you look at the job perspectives, you look at the green jobs, that all this new niche of circular economy, of blue economy, will also open to citizens. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Kenyans are generally supportive of the idea.
And I'm really happy to acquire this bag, an eco-friendly bag. I think we need to adopt an environment that is fit for our children in accordance to the MGGs. And we are calling upon very many people actually to adopt it. It has its negatives and positives, but we need to see the positive in it. And in this adoption.
People who work at small businesses like Mumo Wa Aka that weave plastic bag alternatives see the positive side.
I'm a member of Mumu Wa Aka self-help group, and I do basket weaving. Since I started, I have been able to educate my two children. Since these plastic bags have been banned, I expect we have more sales, and this will enable us to educate our children and also help each other.
The new law imposes a fine of anywhere from $184 to $368 for people who defy the ban. In more serious cases, judges can impose jail time for people who are caught using plastic bags. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
That's our show. Thank you so much for watching us or listening to us today. We'll be back again tomorrow.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
In the 30 days between September 15th and October 15th, the United States observes National Hispanic Heritage Month, celebrating the histories, cultures, and contributions of those United States citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. In 1968, then-President Lyndon B. Johnson, intent on paying tribute to the United States' southern neighbors, proclaimed the week, including September 15th and 16th, to be National Hispanic Heritage Week. The date was specifically chosen because, as stated in the White House proclamation that established the observance, September 15th marks the Independence Day of five South American countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica, and September 16th is Mexico's Independence Day. 20 years later, President Ronald Reagan extended the observance to cover the 30-day period from September 15th to October 15th. People of Hispanic heritage have had a profound influence on the United States, contributing significantly to its development. In 1565, long before any other European set foot on what is today the continental United States, the first Spanish settlers built Fort St. Augustine in northern Florida. Today, St. Augustine is still a thriving town, the country's oldest continuously occupied city. In the West, a string of missions along California's coast grew into some of the world's greatest cities, from San Diego and Los Angeles in the south to Sacramento and San Francisco in the north. And in the southwest, Mexican vaqueros herded cattle across the great grass plains north of the Rio Grande over 2 centuries before the first Texas cowboys began their cross-country cattle drives. Hispanics have served honorably in the United States Armed Forces, defending the values Americans hold dear. They have transformed industries with innovative ideas, and they have led and inspired movements that have pushed the country towards greater equality and a more just society. From those with roots that trace back generations to those who have just set out in pursuit of the promise of America,